Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Maggie Westfold, your host for today. Thank you for joining me to listen in. It's another beautiful weather day out there, so I hope you can all be out and enjoy it. September is upon us, and as the season changes, surprisingly, our state bird, the goldfinch, is doing what we normally think birds would be doing in the spring. Pat Schlarbaum, our nature reporter, will explain.
Today's focus on phenology are the American goldfinches. Goldfinches are late nesters and are actively nesting this time of year. This handsome little finch became the state bird of Iowa in 1933. It is also the state bird in New Jersey on the East Coast and Washington on the West. Goldfinches are welcome and pretty common at bird feeders, where they like sunflower and Niger seeds, primarily. In spring, males are brilliant yellow and shiny black with a bit of white. Females, in all winter birds, are duller yellow beneath with olive above. They molt their feathers twice a year, so it's out with the old and in with the new feathers. And during molts, they look bizarrely patchy, kind of in between. Goldfinch nests are well-built cups securely attached in the crotch of a shrub or small tree. Their nests are most commonly built of milkweed fibers or grass and lined with thistle down. All nest building, incubating, and brooding activities is by the female, according to Carol Thompson in Iowa's Breeding Bird Atlas. Goldfinches lay 3 to 7 glossy pale blue eggs. The lateness of nesting dates well into September is probably related to the maturing of thistle, aster, and goldenrod. And it is worth noting that not all thistles are noxious weeds. There is a prairie thistle with white under the leaves that is native. The seeds from these plants are used to build the nest and as food for the young and the adults. Watching young goldfinches excitedly fanning their wings and beaks for some food items delivered by their parents is really quite a show. Goldfinches fly with a bouncy, undulating pattern and often call in flight, drawing attention to themselves with their potato chip, potato chip, potato chip calling. Goldfinches are active and acrobatic little finches that cling to weeds and seed stalks and tube feeders, and sometimes mill about in large numbers at feeders or on the ground beneath them. The goldfinch's main natural habitats are weedy fields, floodplains, and roadsides, where plants such as thistles and asters are common. And you might be entertained by the young actively food begging from their parents at your feeders any day now. And that's our phenology for today.
Thank you, Pat. On Monday, two civil rights groups filed lawsuits against the federal government's ban on transgenders serving in the military. One was the American Civil Liberties Union, who filed their lawsuit in Baltimore Federal Court on behalf of 6 transgender people in the Army. Meanwhile, on the same day here in Iowa, the American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit on behalf of a transgender citizen in Iowa. Following is an excerpt from a statement issued by the ACLU about what's happening in Iowa. This morning, the ACLU filed a lawsuit for a male Iowa prison nurse whose state employer, the Iowa Department of Corrections, denied him use of the men's restroom and locker rooms. It also denied him health care coverage solely because he is transgender for surgery he needed. It is believed to be the first transgender rights case to be filed in the Iowa courts since 2007, when Iowa put gender identity protections into the law. Jesse Vrew, who worked as a nurse at the Iowa Department of Corrections, DOC, for 7 years, was denied use of the men's restrooms and locker rooms after he had transitioned and presented as male in every way for months. The DOC also denied him health care coverage for medically necessary surgery because he is transgender, even though the DOC provides coverage of the same type of surgery for employees who are cisgender. Previously, Jesse had filed a complaint with the Iowa Civil Rights Commission. In late March, the commission determined that there was a reasonable possibility that it would later make a probable cause determination that illegal discrimination occurred. Now Jesse is proceeding with this lawsuit. "This process has not been easy," said Jesse. "I'm doing it because I feel I need to fight for the rights not only of transgender people who work for the state, but for other Iowa workers as well. I'm not asking for any special treatment of myself or any other transgender person. All I'm asking for is that transgender people be treated the same way as people who are not transgender." He continues to be represented by the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, the ACLU LGBT Project, and ACLU of Iowa cooperating attorney Melissa Hasso of the Sherinian and Hasso Law Firm of Des Moines. Rita Bettis, ACLU of Iowa legal director, said that, to her knowledge, this is the first transgender rights case to be filed in the Iowa District Court since 2007, when Iowa put gender identity protections into the law. "Jesse has a right to fair and equal treatment in the workplace, as do all Iowans. It's disappointing that this case involves the state of Iowa, which should be providing leadership in creating work environments that are free from discrimination based on gender identity. But here, unfortunately, it has done just the opposite." Hasso added, "Transgender Iowans are just as important to the workplace and the community as anyone else. Jesse simply wants to be treated equally. The Iowa Civil Rights Act and the Iowa Constitution guarantee him that right. It is disappointing that the state of Iowa, through the Department of Corrections, has once again made the decision not to follow its own laws on this point. The state has repeatedly taken this position to the taxpayers' detriment, as demonstrated by recent verdicts in favor of other state employees who suffered workplace discrimination. We would very much like to see the state take a leadership role in eliminating workplace discrimination rather than excusing it." Back in 2016, Jesse's supervisors at the DOC told him and his union representative that they had made a final determination that Jesse would not be able to use the employee locker rooms and restrooms corresponding with his gender identity. They said they made the decision because transgender issues were too controversial. Instead, he was required to use a unisex private restroom to dress and store his belongings, isolating him from all of his coworkers. Also, the unisex restroom didn't have a shower, so unlike other employees, Vrew had no option for showering at work. "It's helpful for employers to make gender-neutral spaces available to employees who wish to use them. But what employers cannot do is require employees to use the private spaces and deny them the use of communal facilities solely because they are transgender. Forcing an employee to use a separate space isolates the employee and sends the harmful message that he or she is abnormal and less than his or her colleagues." The DOC has further discriminated against Vrew by denying him coverage for his medically necessary health care for no reason other than his being transgender. The same type of surgical procedures that Vrew needs are covered for state employees who are not transgender, said Bettis. "This is the kind of discrimination Iowa law prohibits." Vrew is no longer working for the DOC. Instead, he has become an assistant director of nursing at a private facility. he is able to use the men's facilities at his new workplace. His medical coverage at the new employer hasn't started, and it's not yet known what coverage is available. The lawsuit is being filed under the Iowa Civil Rights Act and the Equal Protection provisions of the Iowa Constitution. Since 2007, the Iowa Civil Rights Act has prohibited employers from discriminating against employees based on sexual orientation or gender identity. This includes making single-sex spaces such as restrooms and locker rooms available to all employees on the same basis as non-transgender employees, meaning that transgender employees, like everyone else, should be able to use the facilities that match their gender identity. Employers must also provide to transgender employees the same benefits, such as health care, that they provide to employees who are not transgender. The first transgender employment discrimination case, Summers versus the Iowa Civil Rights Commission, was decided in 1983. But today's action is the first case we're aware of to be filed in Iowa District Court that asserts gender identity discrimination in employment since the Iowa Civil Rights Act was amended in 2007 to include gender identity and sexual orientation. Thorn, the theme from the Thornbirds. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Maggie Westfold, your host for today, and thank you for listening in. The Iowa legislature is not currently in session. However, in anticipation of appropriations that will be made for the state of Iowa's budget, the Iowa Board of Regents has been holding public meetings around the state. The meetings are to examine the issues for setting tuition for Iowa's three public universities. All three universities made a five-year tuition plan. The University of Iowa and Iowa State University both propose increases of 7% annually for 5 years. The University of Northern Iowa proposes a 7% increase the first year and just 3% after that. Governor Reynolds said on August 15th, that they need to reconsider their hikes, saying, "That is too much. There is no way that Iowa families can afford a 7% increase over 5 years." However, Reynolds did not say whether the state would increase funding in the next legislative session. Senator Herman Kornbach from District 23 and ranking member of the Iowa Senate Education Committee also issued a statement saying that students cannot afford the increase. Senator Kornbach is a professor of economics at ISU. He stopped by KHOI Studios to explain why this tuition increase issue is of great concern to him and what he proposes. He spoke with Ursula Rudenberg about this. He started out by discussing how the ratio of who bears the burden of paying for higher education has shifted from the state to the student.
Public universities do rely on state support to help keep the cost down for students. Students still have to pay tuition, and I think it's appropriate that they invest in their own education. But the question really is then, what's appropriate balance? If you go back as far as like 1981, the balance was significantly towards the state support. 77% of the university costs in 1981 were borne by state appropriations and only roughly 21% by tuition. Now, 20 years later, in 2001, the ratio had shifted a little bit in the direction of tuition, but it was still 2-to-1 state support over tuition, 63.7% versus 31%. Unfortunately, in the last 16 years, that ratio has been reversed, so that now state support is only 32%, whereas tuition support is 63%. It's now 2-to-1 greater burden on students and their parents to pay the bills.
And this is statewide, right?
That's right. That's for the region's institutions.
Which oversees really all three of the colleges.
That's right.
Universities, really.
The numbers may vary a little bit college by college, but basically the trend has been the same. UNI, University of Iowa, Iowa State, all three. The tuition is now taking up the lion's share of the costs. It has dramatically increased the burden on students and their parents. And I'm just afraid that there are some students who are being priced out of the market for higher education, or if they're able to scrape together the bucks, they graduate with a very heavy student loan debt burden. Either way, I don't think that that is sound economic policy for the state. We want to invest in a highly skilled workforce. We need more skilled and educated workers. And it's not fair for the students. It's not the promise of public higher education.
There's a shortfall on the state level.
Well, how has that come about? You know, the state still has the power to raise revenue. State allocates the money according to its priorities. The simple fact of the matter is that higher education has slipped in the priority, at least in terms of the legislature and the governor's office. This isn't new. You had a recession in 2001. You had the great George Bush recession in 2008. In both cases, state revenues plummeted. And unfortunately, the state chose to basically milk the universities as a cash cow. They cut the universities very substantially. $129 million was cut because of the great Bush recession. And only about $50 million of that was ever restored once the recovery got going. Now the legislature finds itself in a shortfall position this year, and this time not because we're in recession, but the legislature chose to hit the universities with a disproportionately large share of the budget cuts. So basically, politicians can run for office next year saying, oh, no, we didn't raise taxes. But the truth of the matter is there's a substantial tax increase in the form of higher tuition that hits students and their families, and I think it's just unfair. The Board of Regents had proposed this year a deal to the legislature that if we gave them about 2% more, basically just inflation, they would hold the tuition increase to 2%. Well, instead of giving them an increase, we cut them substantially, about $24 million. And as a result, the tuition increase this fall has been 5%, not 2%. It's 2.5 times larger than what the regents had initially proposed. I'm very distressed about the situation in Iowa. But really, if you look across the country, there has been massive disinvestment in public higher education. You know, the officials at Iowa State say, well, look, our tuition is among the lowest in our peer group. That's the best of a bad lot kind of argument. Our tuition has gone up twice as fast as inflation over the last 50 years. And the burden on students, like I say, is just exorbitant.
So you're saying we can do better?
Oh, I certainly think we can do better.
It sounds like what you're saying is it's between raising taxes or raising student fees. Is that correct?
Well, that's part of the trade-off, but there are other things that could be done. The fastest growing segment of the state budget by far over the last dozen years or so have been corporate tax breaks. We seem to be throwing money left and right at all of these different companies. Everybody comes along hat in hand, say, please give us money. And the state has just gone really overboard in doing that.
Can you be specific?
Sure. You remember the fertilizer company down in southeast Iowa, the one that's owned by a foreign Egyptian corporation? We threw, just in terms of state support, $107 million to that. Now, they're going to create supposedly about 160 jobs, and it's great to have new jobs in the state. But when you divide that out, that comes in just in terms of the state support under the so-called high-quality jobs program, it comes to $676,000 per job, $250,000 per job. The actual cost is maybe three times that when you add in federal and local assistance. But just in terms of this state support, we could instead have given full tuition scholarships to 78 students this year. Mm-hmm. For one job, $676,000. The alternative use for that money, 78 full tuition scholarships. Now, the most recent, you heard just in the last couple of days, coming to Waukee with a data center. Well, data centers are basically just a building full of computers. It doesn't really employ very many people. $208 million for 50 jobs. Now, $208 million is state and local support, but that's $4 million per job. $4 million per job. We could have given full tuition scholarships to about 480 students at Iowa State this year.
Senator Kornbach, you're in the legislature. What are the reasons given?
Well, we all want more jobs coming to Iowa. But really, Iowa doesn't have a jobs problem so much as it has an income problem. Unemployment rate right now is down in the 3% range. Most economists would tell you that that's what we call frictional unemployment. That's people just between jobs, or students who've just gotten out of school, haven't landed a job yet, or maybe a parent who's been staying home with a young child, re-entering the workforce. There are a certain level of unemployment that has nothing to do with macroeconomic conditions, that has to do with people just in transition. Well, that's about where we are. Unemployment in Ames, month to month, has been bouncing under 2%. I don't know how you start a new business in Ames. I don't know where you would find the workers when the unemployment is that low. Where we're hurting is that people aren't making very much money, especially people with a high school education or less. At the same time, there are lots of businesses throughout the state who are looking to fill jobs, and they can't find workers with the right skills. And this was true even in the depths of the recession. There are jobs that went better because the people looking didn't have the right skills. So we have to make the investment in education, the community colleges as well as the universities, to help people climb that ladder of success. It's how do you get to be skilled labor? Mm-hmm. It's how do you afford the education to do that? And the rate at which tuition is going up, we're pricing people out of the market. And that hurts not only them, it hurts all of Iowa businesses that are trying to expand, that are trying to find the workers to do the work.
Now, Iowa State is a university that's an engineering school, it's a science school. So are you saying that the people are leaving the state with this education?
A lot of kids are. We're not a high-wage state. You know, when our students graduate with the level of student debt at Iowa State, we have been at or near the tops in the country in terms of debt per student for the students who are carrying student loan debt. So carrying that kind of debt, where do they go to make the kind of salaries to be able to service that debt? You know, think about your friends and neighbors. How many of their kids, you know, went to Iowa or Iowa State and then took a job in Minneapolis or Chicago? They go to Denver. They go to Boston. We have a real out-migration of educated talent. Again, that only damages our long-term prospects for our own state economy. So when the tuition increases as fast as it's gone up, there are some students who are priced out of the market and can't afford the education to get the skills. And the ones who do wind up with so much debt that they have to leave.
Your concern as an Iowa senator, it's talent drain.
That's right. That's right. It's my concern as a state senator. It's my concern as a classroom teacher. I have 251 students in Econ 101 this semester. I want them to succeed at the university, and I'd like to have them stay here. Some young people are going to want to go and roam the world, see the world, and you can never stop that. It's kind of like my profile, all right? I was born in Minnesota, grew up in Wisconsin. Spent a decade on the East Coast, then I spent a decade on the West Coast, and then I got smart and got back to the Midwest. You know, you can afford housing here, you got good public schools, you have safe communities. What's not to like? What I'd want for them to have is the opportunity to stay here, to be able to find jobs that pay well, and not have them burdened with excessive student loan debt. I expect a lot of legislators have heard from it, not just ones representing university communities.
Do you get firsthand feedback from students about this?
I hear from their parents.
And what are they saying?
Pretty much what we've just been discussing. You know, what's your ambition for the future of the state? You know, we have always prided ourselves at being a state that provides very high-quality public education. I mean, halfway through the fiscal year, we're cutting their budget. That's really outrageous. There's very little room for them to cut. They've already committed to teaching staff and, you know, library personnel, et cetera. You start cutting the budgets and cutting the budgets and cutting the budgets. At some point, faculty salaries won't be competitive. Research facilities won't be competitive. Library and computer facilities won't be competitive. You know, I take the long-term view. I want to keep our quality up and our cost down. Cost of higher education is going up. And then, you know, coming into this year, the original 2.5% tuition increase that was proposed all of a sudden became 5. And now we're faced with proposals for 7 and 7 and 7 and 7. That would add up to about a $3,000 increase in just tuition alone. That's going to make a bad situation much, much worse. More than half of my constituents are Iowa State students. I joke with people. I tell other legislators, they're not really my constituents. They're your constituents. I'm just borrowing them for 4 years.
Is there a division between representatives and senators who are coming from the university communities and those that aren't in terms of concern about this?
I think to some extent, yes. It should be of concern to everybody. Iowa State produced a map, which of the three schools was the biggest drawer of students, and the map was very heavily Cardinal and Gold.
So, really? So oh, yeah. Iowa State draws the most students from around the state?
Oh, yeah. Oh, far and away. And what I'm talking about is on a county-by-county basis. Iowa State is also easily the biggest, you know, 36,600 students a year ago.
You're saying what Iowa State does has a big impact on the state because
of... Oh, yeah. Iowa State, through the Extension Service, through the various outreach facilities we do with technical support for business and small business development centers and so forth, we impact businesses and communities and their economies throughout the state. And our research park out here has had tremendous success in recent years in bringing in new businesses and providing incubators for the start of brand new businesses for startups. I mean, it's just a terrific resource for the state, and we really shouldn't be disinvesting in it. The support should be from across the state because the whole state benefits.
So what is the remedy?
Well, I think the regents need to come to the legislature, and the legislature needs to work with them to work towards restoring the balance. You can't get it all done in 1 year, but it ain't going to happen at all unless you're willing to start. And I think we need to start. Remember I said that during each of the last two recessions, the universities got slammed. In the wake of the 2001 recession, a couple of years after, as we were recovering, the Regents Universities came to the legislature and basically said that if you, over, I think it was a 3-year period, restore the lost funds, we will hold tuition increases to the rate of inflation. If the legislature put the money back, they would hold down on tuition increases. And we made that deal, and it basically worked pretty darn well. So I can well foresee a similar sort of deal being made. 3-4 years ago, we also had a proposal. If the state would, again, restore some of the money from the Great Bush Recession, the universities would freeze tuition. We were successful in getting that done. We had 2 years of tuition freeze. We would have had a third, except that Mr. Branstad chose to veto the money that was necessary to ensure that third year of tuition freeze. If the state needs to find additional resources or reprioritize things, I think some of these corporate tax breaks that really have gone way overboard, I think some of those need to be pared back. Is this the best investment of the money? The first thing I want to do is to look at some of these corporate tax credits that have been growing so very rapidly, the fastest growing segment of the state budget by far. We're throwing money at these corporations. Most of them would have come here anyway. That's the fallacy, that these economic development incentives, a lot of the time, you're just giving people money for doing what they would have done anyway.
Why would they come here anyway?
In the case of Apple, in case of Microsoft, Google, when they have server farms, you know, basically big buildings full of computers, we have cheap electricity. We are one of the leading states in the country, one of the top three in terms of wind energy. All right. On a per capita basis, I think we're first in the country. Texas is a lot bigger than we are. But, you know, we're right up there. And we don't have earthquakes, don't have hurricanes. So we've got a reliable, cheap power supply here. You know, that's a big attraction. Another big attraction is a modest cost of living. Plus, we have good public schools, quality of life. Auto insurance is a heck of a lot cheaper. We have a good, affordable cost of living and quality of life.
You were saying earlier the state used to shoulder a much larger majority of the cost of education.
Mm-hmm.
Are you advocating that we go back in that direction?
Certainly back in that direction. Can we get back to where we were in 1981? Probably not. But I think we need to rebalance it. I think we need to move back in the direction of 50-50.
How does this actually work in the legislature? Are you in communication with the Board of Regents? Are you asking them to take this position?
Well, I wanted to be in communication with the Board of Regents, but they scheduled the first meeting for, I think it was July 27th, invited legislators and governor's office and et cetera to come to the meeting down in Des Moines. I signed up to go. I'm representing my caucus. I'm the ranking member on the Senate Education Committee. I'm a member of the Senate Education Appropriations Subcommittee. Senate Republicans, House Republicans, didn't bother to send anybody. Governor's office didn't have anybody who was going to make any presentation. Department of Education, I believe the same thing. We just didn't get any buy-in, any indication of willingness of participation from the Republican side. I mean, the task force is, I'm sorry to say this bluntly, but is chaired by a former Republican senator, Larry McKibben. They canceled that meeting. They could have had that meeting. They could have listened to the people who were interested enough and energetic enough to be willing to come and present. But you know, it was so conspicuous that the Republicans weren't going to be there that they canceled the meeting. Then they held a meeting, 2 weeks ago now. These meetings were held on the three campuses, but they were held before the students came back. So the students had no real opportunity to have a voice. And, hey, they're the ones who have to pay the bills. Why is this tuition task force not listening to the students? Why couldn't they schedule a meeting this week or next week when students could participate? If this task force is more than just window dressing, I think that they need to come to campus again and give students a chance to be heard.
So what are you going to do now?
What we're mainly talking about here is the appropriations process. Mm-hmm. So each year there are appropriations bills in each of the major areas. I'm on the Education Appropriations Subcommittee. So that's the subcommittee that produces the Education Appropriations Bill, and that's where most, not all, but most of the Regents University funding goes. I will certainly be arguing for bigger numbers here. I'm hoping that we get a little bit better response than we did this last year. Mm-hmm. So I will do my best. I know that all my Democratic colleagues will do their best. I'm just hoping that the other side is more willing to listen than it was this year. And really a key in getting that done is having their own local constituents, our students, talking to their back home legislators, like I said, having their parents talk, having the business leaders talk. I mean, business leaders understand the need for an educated workforce. I think we just need to go back at it full force this time, marshal all of our troops, and just try to get a better deal for education and for the community colleges as well. They were cut about $3 million this year, and they are crucial in educating students for what are called middle-skill jobs. That's not a pejorative. That's people who need a year or two beyond high school to be a dental technician, to do mechanical stuff, to do plumbing, to do carpentry. You know, there are a lot of skilled jobs there that don't require a full four-year degree, but do require something beyond high school. We need to restore the funding for the community colleges as well.
Now, the governor expressed concern about the tuition hike. Do you have a sense of where she's at in terms of where she sees a resolution for this?
The duties and responsibilities now fall to the acting governor, Kim Reynolds. She has to prepare a budget this fall, and I think that we will see her priorities when that budget document is submitted in January.
So you don't really know yet what she's going to do?
No.
The governor plays an active role in setting the stage
happens. Very much. Mm-hmm. The first major step is the formulation and submission of the governor's recommendations.
So the governor sets the tone.
That's a good way of putting it. She was dismayed about 7% tuition increases. She was dismayed about major tuition increases. You know, it comes down to is she willing to put her money where her mouth is? And I hope she is. I hope she is. I bring it down to how many hours does a kid have to work? Back up through the mid-1980s, if you worked full-time in the summer and part-time during the school year, modest amount of hours, you could pay your own way. Now, you couldn't do it even if you worked full-time year-round. The college costs have just escalated because of the disinvestment from the state side. Go back to 1968. Tuition, room, and board at Iowa State was $1,100. It's now $17,000. Now, inflation, right? But if you adjusted by the consumer price index, that $1,100 would be about $7,800 now. So instead, it's $17,000. Tuition, room, and board have gone up more than twice as fast as inflation in the last half century. But here's one way to look at it. Most students have summer jobs. Most, if not many, students have term time jobs. It used to be the case that a student working at minimum wage, if they had a full-time job in the summer, and if they worked 10 to 12 hours a week during the school year at Iowa State, they could make enough at the minimum wage to pay their own bills, to pay their own bills. In fact, that was true up through the mid-1980s. It is definitely not true now. You can't go to school and do this. But if a student could work full-time year-round and still today not make enough at a minimum wage job to pay tuition, room, and board.
And that was Senator Herman Kurmbach, Democrat, speaking with Ursula Rudenberg about the proposed tuition hike at Iowa's three public universities. To get the Republican point of view, Ursula contacted Senator Tim Kreinbrink from District 5, co-chair of the Education Appropriations Committee for the Iowa State Senate. He is from Fort Dodge, where he owns a financial services business.
You represent the Fort Dodge area, is that correct?
Yes, I represent Humboldt, Calhoun, Pocahontas, and the majority of Webster County, yeah, North Central.
Could you explain for us laypeople what your role is in the process with the Board of Regents and the allocation of funds to the universities?
I'm the chair of the Senate. But
the Senate.
On the education, and then I am assistant or vice chair of the entire appropriation with the Senate, with Charles Snyder. And I take part on the education committee, transportation committee, and then also local government. Appropriations, you never act individually. You act together as a House and a Senate. So that's why I'm a co-chair, because that would be Cecil Dolichek.
Okay. And he's the representatives?
Yeah, so those are the two big money areas. And one of the reasons why I'm there is because, you know, I've got 30-plus years in finance.
You're a businessman in Fort Dodge?
Yep, financial advisor. When Republicans took majority in the last election, I became the co-chair of that committee, which is responsible for colleges. We make recommendations on the funding that happens in those areas. Cecil Dolichek is a representative from the House, who is the other co-chair. So him and I now chair that committee. We are directly responsible for coming up with a budget for those entities. And then it has to go through a full committee, and then it brought to the floor. I mean, there's room for changing in between that time. So,
and in the process of making those recommendations, do you work closely with the governor?
No. We pretty much get our targets from the Senate Appropriations Committee that would allow us to have X amount of dollars for that area that we are then responsible for spending.
Appropriations basically means allocation of funding.
All the funds. And education appropriations is a portion of that. You know, I have a lot of different appropriation committees that are responsible for their budgets in their own area, and then that makes up the entire appropriation of the $7.2 billion that is estimated that our revenue would be. It's all allocated on an amount that is estimated, you know, that's going to be coming in. So if less money comes in, then they go back and have to sharpen their pencil on each of the appropriation areas, you know, and that's kind of what happened last year, you know, at the end of the year, June 30th. So we were in session and had to actually de-appropriate money that had already been appropriated the year before the Republicans were in power because the funds weren't there to make true on the obligation that we had committed to previous session.
Now, Iowa State projected for 5 years. Was that their choice or was that by request of the...
I would imagine it was probably Regent Committee. Honestly, I've talked to the presidents, but, you know, we never talked about money as far as, you know, everybody wanted more, but they also understand the situation that the state is in. And, you know, we had $720 million in our rainy day fund, and we had almost $1 billion in a savings account. And the first 2 years that the year that I was running for Senate was the second year that we were spending about $300 million more than we were taking in. So if we continued that spending pattern, you can do the math and find out in about 3.5 years that $1 billion in our savings account was going to be gone. And that's just at normal spending. So what happened was we also had a decline in revenue because of the farm economy wasn't quite as great. So the amount of money coming in revenue was lower than what was projected. Plus we were spending more, which happened to be between $300 and $350 million more than we are actually taking in. And we were on the path. I mean, I predicted this 4 or 5 years ago that we're on the path of exactly what happened. Nobody listened to that because everybody thought everything was just fine.
You're saying the shortfall is mostly due to farm prices?
That's part of it, and overspending. Sooner or later, you know, if the economy isn't really cooking, to be able to afford that additional spending, we're going to continue to spend our reserves down to zero.
So your concern really has been overspending?
Overspending and a below-average economy right now because of the commodity prices being so low. The revenue coming into the farmers has been cut in half. I know that they're not in charge of 100% of our economy, but they're a pretty big part of our economy.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
And thank you. I have to say that it was important, I think, for people to note that the legislature was very, very proud of keeping tuition level, you know, for 3 or 4 years. You know, that's before I was in the legislature. Well, if you're keeping something level and the salaries of your administration and your professors and the cost of lights and electric and heat and the cost of maintenance and everything continues to go upward and it's not being met with increased revenue from tuition, that money has to come from somewhere. And so when people are saying they're really upset about this increase of tuition, they have to remember that they went 3 or 4 years with no increase of tuition, which then helped, you know, helped move that needle when it comes to, you know, what was happening to our reserves.
Mm-hmm.
So sooner or later, someone has to pay. And now it's us, the taxpayer.
Right now it's the students because the fees are going up.
Yeah, but it wasn't for 4 years.
Do you feel that it's appropriate that these fee increases occur at this point?
And increases are happening in our taxpayers' lives. We have people that are having 40 and 50% increases every year on health insurance. Some people are paying between $20,000 and $30,000 a year for their health insurance that raised 50-some%. I don't believe that's right either. But, you know, the cost of things are going up, and there's two sources that money can come from for our colleges. It's either going to be tuition and it's going to be tax money that comes into the state of Iowa. You know, when you have K-12 education, and health and human services. Those two entities are responsible for 82% of our $7.2 billion budget. So that leaves 18% of the $7.2 billion has to fund the entire rest of the state. That's what we're dealing with. So we need to get some of that other spending under control, too.
When I spoke with Senator Quirnbach here in Ames, he felt that some of the money should come from less tax breaks to corporations that are moving to Iowa. How do you see that?
And, you know, that's the spin that they're using. But you have to remember, in the last 7 years that Senator Bolcom has been the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, tax credits have gone from $200 million to over $700 million a year. So when they're coming and blaming the Republicans for doing this, they were actually in charge of the Senate at the time, and the massive increases in tax credits happened under their watch. So if they didn't want that to happen, they could have said, no, we're not having that happen. The other thing I think that people don't understand about tax credits is that not all tax credits are upfront money. So they don't give them $200 million and say, hey, come to Iowa. They give it to them in either property tax relief or some type of a future tax relief that they don't have to pay. Well, if the company's not here right now, what are we getting off that? Nothing. So if the company comes and they give them tax relief for 5 years, they give them some other incentive that they don't have to pay as much taxes for the first 10 years. They're still employing people who are buying homes, paying property taxes, paying sales tax when they buy stuff in their communities, sending kids to our schools. What are we out? Because there was nothing there before. So at least this way, we're looking at something in the future that's going to be coming. And if we have to do these things to attract companies to come, then I think we have to do what we're going to do this year, and that's massive tax reform to make Iowa competitive so we don't have to give away the farm in order to attract these companies to come to the state of Iowa. It's more complicated than just a political soundbite that puts the blame on someone or something for political reasons. And that seems to be what the press runs with, all of these huge tax credits.
You don't agree with Senator Quirnbach that priorities should be changed?
If you're going to say that our priorities have to be changed, and then the next question should have been, so what would you take that money from? Because if we took it from something else, then there's going to be criticism on where that money came from. Because, oh, you can't take it from there because you're hurting these people. You know, they had those years to make those priorities. But the thing is that when they were in power, we had money. But the money was being spent down at a rapid pace. And it was obvious as an investment advisor and anyone that has a budget at home that this was not going to last.
But when
right
I
now,
asked,
I think what we're going to do, Ursula, that I think needs to be done, is we need to look at all the tax credits that are given out, that $700 million, mm-hmm. and we have to eliminate the ones that are not revenue positive for the state of Iowa.
So you're, in that sense, you're agreeing with Senator Quirnbach that's something.
Yeah, I think there are some, you know, but I'll guarantee this right now. And when we eliminate some of them, he's going to be the first one to criticize because it's not going to be the right one. That's how politics works. You know, I'm a business guy and I've had my own business for 33 years and I ran for the state senate to make Iowa a better place.
Senator Quirnbach is saying that the tuition increases that are being proposed will make it prohibitive. And in fact, the governor herself has expressed concern about the tuition fees. What is your take on that?
It may. I mean, it may, you know, deter kids from taking an initial path to the four-year Regent schools. And it may actually work in the favor of some of our community colleges, which are all excellent. You know, I'm not saying that I'm happy that's one of the byproducts that's going to come from it. But at the same point, there are other options that are available.
Community colleges?
That's probably the option.
Actually, one of the concerns that Quirnbach expressed too, I'm interested in your response, is he sees somewhat of a vicious cycle between low wages in Iowa and high tuition that he is concerned will lead to a talent drain in the state. Do you see anything like that?
No, I think that's happened in Illinois, and that's why people are moving from Illinois to Iowa. So, you know, I went to a summit here probably about 2 months ago and met with seven states, and they had a representative there as well as some of their educators were there too. and they talked about, you know, their states and what's going on. And, you know, Iowa was very competitive. I mean, we actually have one of the lowest tuition rates. You know, we are one of the lowest in all their peer groups. We don't like it because we're raising it, but at the same time, we're very, very competitive and actually on the more competitive end than a lot of their peer groups are. So I don't see that as, I think that's just a threat that it makes a good soundbite also, and, you know, gets people kind of worked up. You know, my question still is, if we're going to freeze tuition or lower the amount of the raise of increase, you know, where does that money come from then? Tell me where you want to take that money from. In business, you know, some of those decisions have to be made. And our Regent schools are no different than a business. They are running it not to be profitable, but at least to break even so they don't cost state money. In the past, it's always been that a Republican House and a Democratic Senate, so there had to be a compromise. So the House would come in with lower spending, like a lot lower spending, and the Senate would say, no, you know, we're going to have a 3.5% increase for our K-12 schools, and so, but they would start at 6, and so they had to compromise, or we'd still be in session from 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So they had to compromise in the middle somewhere. So, you know, I always find it interesting because before my first year down there, well, my first year, 2 years down there, you know, I voted no on every budget item because I knew we were going to run out of money. I mean, I knew we were going to be faced with this situation. And now I'm voting yes because we're spending less, and they're voting no because we're not spending enough.
Right, and you're voting against overspending.
I'm voting yes because we're spending less, and they're voting no because they want to spend more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to vote that way, and it was easy for me too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're not in the majority. So what does it count? It doesn't count at all because, you know, I mean, you don't have enough votes to pass anything. And so a lot of that is political spin. And I would agree that, you know, we are guilty of that too. At the same point, we have to be responsible with your money that you give us. And we know that. So.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Thanks, Bye. Ursula.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been your host, Maggie Westfold. Thank you for listening. Earlier in the show, we heard from Pat Schlarbaum, who told us about the Iowa goldfinch. Also, I read the full text of the press release issued this past Monday by the ACLU regarding a lawsuit filed by them on behalf of Jesse Vrew, a transgender person and a former nurse with the Iowa Department of Corrections, now employed as a nurse in the private sector. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.